fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. Let's kick off in Johannesburg, where Spanish League football champion Barcelona beat the South African club Mamelodi Sundowns 3-1 in a fun and festive friendly international match. Many of the fans at FNB Stadium came to see Barca's Argentine superstar, Lionel Messi, and they cheered loudly when he came on in the 74th minute. At that point, Barcelona led 3-0 on goals by French striker Ousmane Dembele in the 3rd minute, Uruguayan star Luis Suarez in the 19th minute, and Portuguese midfielder Andre Gomes in the 67th minute. The South African Sibusiso Vilakazi scored the goal for Sundowns in the 76th minute. The game was billed as the Nelson Mandela Centenary Cup, part of celebrations to mark 100 years since the birth of South Africa's late president. And with the World Cup in Russia kicking off in exactly 4 weeks, here's another fun World Cup fact. The Barcelona Mamelodi Sundowns friendly was held at the same stadium where South Africa hosted the 2010 World Cup final between Spain and the Netherlands. The Spaniards beat the Dutch 1-0 on an extra time goal by Andres Iniesta. 8 years later, Iniesta, in one of his final acts as Barcelona captain, lifted the Nelson Mandela Centenary Cup. The game was also a reminder that for all the money invested in hosting the World Cup in 2010, South African soccer still has not risen to elite international standards. The country's national team, nicknamed Bafana Bafana, did not qualify for next month's World Cup in Russia. From Johannesburg, VOA's Anita Powell tries to answer the question, why isn't South African soccer better?
No one was expecting the Mamelodi Sundowns, a team from the outskirts of Pretoria, South Africa's capital, to beat FC Barcelona, the Spanish team packed with legends like Andres Iniesta, Lionel Messi, and Luis Suarez. But as the cold morning light dawned over the home team's 3-1 loss Thursday, many South African sports fans were agonizing over a question that has long plagued the Rainbow Nation. In this sports-crazed country, which tends to do well in rugby, cricket, and other athletic endeavors, why does soccer not measure up? Sports science professors Yoga Kupu and Chris Fortain engaged in some second-guessing with VOA. Fortain is a sports management lecturer at the University of Johannesburg and former professional player. He says South African soccer has not gotten any better since the nation hosted the 2010 World Cup. And Fortain says he and other experts have appealed to the South African Football Association.
I think we have taken a step back. We undertook a major research project within our department, headed by Prof. Kupu, and we identified 7 major streams that are affecting South African football. That was in 2012. It's still on the shelf somewhere there in SAFA. Nothing has been implemented.
Kupu, who heads the Department of Sport and Movement Studies at the University of Johannesburg, identified what he said were 3 main problems.
You could see the wide chasm between South Africa and Barcelona, the methods of play and how easily Barcelona played during the game, whereas South Africa was really chasing their tails in most cases. So from that point of view, I think the gap that exists is basically, in my view, 3 things. It's obviously management of football. Secondly, it is the science related to football and how its application in terms of football, particularly within teams. And thirdly, youth development is almost non-existent.
Antoinette Muller is a Cape Town-based sports writer who has written extensively about South Africa's Premier Soccer League. She says she's not entirely sure why the sport is languishing.
This season was
absolutely shocking. It was the least, was the worst in terms of average goals per game in about a decade and a half. It really was absolutely horrific. And I think there's, because the PSL is viewed as one of the best leagues on the continent, there's an issue of complacency in not wanting, I don't want to say not wanting to improve, because teams are getting better and, you know, they're hiring all the staff that can do all the analysing. But it's sort of the basic skills are lacking.
Fortin also notes that when it comes to soccer, he believes that children are the future.
But in South Africa, we don't have football playing schools. If you look at Germany after 2000, when they didn't qualify, when they lost dismally in the European Championship, the European Nations Cup, they went on a 10-year program. A 10-year program, they established 44 football playing schools. They made a prediction that they'll go and win the World Cup on another continent, which they did in 2014.
South Africa won't be anywhere near the World Cup in Russia, which begins in mid-June. But judging from the huge crowd of more than 85,000 ecstatic fans who braved the cold to watch Wednesday night's game, one thing was clear. South Africa may not be winning on the pitch, but South Africans are watching soccer closely. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Thanks, Anita. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Egyptian football star Mohamed Salah is looking forward to the World Cup in Russia. After a dazzling debut season with Liverpool, Salah set a new record for most goals in a 38-game English Premier League season with 32, and Mighty Mo bagged 44 goals in all competitions. As a result, Salah also won several end-of-season awards. Mitchell Obi is the president of the International Sports Press Association, Africa section. Reporter Iron Mike Mbonye asked him, based on Mohamed Salah's spectacular season with Liverpool, is he qualified for football's most prestigious award, the Ballon d'Or?
The issue should not be whether he's qualified. For the mere fact that he has been rated as a continental star, African player of the year, that gives him an edge because we are in a global village. For a player practicing his trade in England and making an impact in such a way that his continent, Africa, can recognize his skills and can recognize his performance within a particular time shows that people are watching. And I think Mohamed Salah, a very humble player, has shown tremendous excellence all around. He's not really an attacker by excellence, but he has scored more goals than even players who make marksmanship their trade.
How would you assess Salah's performance for Liverpool and they just concluded the season?
Outstanding. Simply outstanding. And I think he went beyond all expectations. And for a player making his having his first season in a team like Liverpool and glowing in all fronts and not disappointed, and to think that he was voted all round from the sports journalists in the UK to the professional players to even the league itself as the best player for a team that did not even win the league. That summarizes his output and his contribution. I think for him, excellence became a habit.
The fact that Salah was not given the green light when he was in Chelsea, he was in Roma, he wasn't still shining, and he now came to Liverpool to shine and do the magic. What are the expectations for next year's football season?
There is still more Salah to see. He is part of the World Cup team, the Egypt World Cup team into Russia. And I think that is where he can find his way into the Ballon d'Or consideration. If he can make a mark in the World Cup with Egypt, if he can also pick the UEFA Champions League, for which Liverpool is in the final, there is no way Salah will not contest effectively with any name in the globe today. Indeed, ball for ball, he is all around giving his output the best so far.
For other African players who are playing abroad, not just in the English Premier League, what would be your advice to them regarding the feat achieved by Mohamed Salah?
Salah still has frontiers to conquer. We have seen an African player become European Player of the Year, African Player of the Year, World Player of the Year, and even went beyond that to become president of a country. So Salah still has many bright and brilliant days ahead of him, and we expect him to do that. Indeed, Africa wants to see a Salah who emerge as the FIFA Best Player of the Year, and why not the Ballon d'Or winner? He has shown that he can do it. If you can excel in a league that is rated as the toughest in Europe, if you can excel in Champions League and reach the final of mankind's biggest and most illustrious competition, the UEFA Champions League, and if you can lead your team to pick a ticket to the World Cup and go beyond just picking a ticket to show the quality that gives you that edge, I think you can truly understand why he's a Mohammed.
That's Mitchell Obi, the president of the International Sports Press Association, Africa section. And Mitchell was talking with reporter Iron Mike Imbonye in Port Harcourt, Nigeria. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Mitchell Obi mentioned the UEFA Champions League final. Mohamed Salah in Liverpool will play reigning title holder Real Madrid on May 26th in Kiev, Ukraine. Liverpool is bidding for its sixth European title, with its last trophy in 2005. Real Madrid, meanwhile, is aiming for a third consecutive European championship and a record-extending 13th overall. And with a victory on the 26th, Real would wrap up a sweep of European club football's two top titles by Madrid-based clubs. Atletico Madrid lifted the Europa League trophy on Wednesday with a 3-0 victory over Marseille in Lyon, France. French striker Antoine Griezmann had two goals for Atletico and was named man of the match. Atletico's captain Gabi capped the victory with a fine finish in the last minute of the game. Several of Marseille's players were in tears after the final whistle, undone by a player, Griezmann, who was turned down by several French clubs when he was a youth because of his small size. For his part, Antoine Griezmann had this to say after the match, and I quote, "This is a reward for me after I left home at the age of 14. For all the work I've put in, the suffering, there has been joy and sadness, but I'm so happy and I hope to be able to live more moments like this again." Let's give a Sunny Side of Sports salute to French striker Antoine Griezmann of Atletico Madrid, the man of the match in the 2018 Europa League final. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. My VOA colleague Jim Stevenson joins us now with a package of sports news. And Jim tees off with a 32-year-old American golfer who recently ended a long winless drought.
It means everything to me. I feel like it's my first win.
PGA Tour professional Webb Simpson was on top of the golf world in 2012 when he won the U.S. Open. But since 2013, he didn't win a single tournament until Sunday at the Players' Championship in Ponte Vedra Beach, Florida.
To win a major championship and a few other tour events and then go over 4 years without a win, you know, I never doubted myself, but at the same time, that's a long time.
Starting with the largest Sunday lead ever at the Players' Championship with a 7-shot advantage, no one got closer than 4 shots on the famed TPC Sawgrass course.
I felt like that middle part of the round was big. You know, after I bogeyed 10, we had a little weight on 11, and making a birdie on 11, I think, was probably the biggest hole for me of the day. Got me back to even par for the day, and I was just playing smart. I was sitting a little bit further away from pins than I normally would.
Tiger Woods made another big run that revved up the crowd and revived hopes that he was close to winning. But so did three other players, as Simpson methodically went shot by shot before safely reaching the famed 17th hole Island Green.
I kept reminding myself today that the only thing that matters is my next shot. And it's easy to do on Thursday. It's a lot harder to do today. Once I got to 17 and the ball was on the green, internally I was celebrating.
While Webb Simpson broke his winless drought, there was a golfer who won for the first time in Sicily.
Det är väldigt svårt att sätta ord på hur jag känner just nu. Jag är glad, jag är lättad, jag är känslosam. Det är svårt att beskriva känslan.
Translation?
It's so hard to put words on my emotions at the moment. I'm just so happy, revealed, emotional. All at the same time.
Joakim Lagergren of Sweden clinched a dramatic first victory on the European Tour as he beat Mike Lorenzo Vera of France on the first hole of a playoff at the Rocco Forte Sicilian Open.
I felt that my game was in good shape. I was like covering the pin all the time. I just didn't have the distance control really with the approach shots, but made it up with some good putts.
Lorenzo Vera was also a runner-up last week in golf sixes. Despite playing well 2 weeks in a row, he was...
Not super happy, of course. What can I say?
Mike Lorenzo Vera France is on to the inaugural Belgian knockout, where he's looking to ride his strong play after those two runner-up finishes.
You're disappointed in the result, but all of this gives you a lot of power to continue and then to try to do better and then keep working. It feels good to be in contention, man. And then plus the support, you just want to keep going and then play even better.
The Belgian knockout near Antwerp is the first European Tour event to be held in Belgium in 18 years. The new event is a hybrid of regular stroke play and head-to-head elimination, played over the nine holes of two separate and rather distinct courses. Thomas Peters is the tournament host.
It's never over until the last hole here. In the stroke play match play format, so that's the reason why I chose it. It's you have to battle to the end, and this you can be five down after or five shots back after three holes, and you can still come out on top.
Peter says players will have to focus on accuracy.
It's very tight, so you need to be your ball striking needs to be very good here. Not a lot of drivers, but greens are quite tough at times. Some tricky pin positions. But I think having the match play format's going to make it very interesting.
Thomas Peters likes the trend of players hosting tournaments.
I think it's important for players to host tournaments because, you know, this is my home course. It brings a bit of pressure with it, but it's good pressure, and I like it, and then I try to embrace it.
And he's happy with how all the hard preparation work has come together.
To see it now, after 2 years, it's pretty cool. I walked through the caddy lounge and the caddies are really appreciative. They said, Thomas, the food's great, and that those kind of small things that we wanted to get those things right. You know, I wanted to have all the things I like about other golf tournaments and implement them here.
A new media channel created by two brothers who are athletes is shining the spotlight on young basketball players and gaining growing attention in the sports world. Bradley and Brandon Deo are the creators of web-based channel Mars Reel. Top plays by top high school athletes are getting exposure beyond their local communities, thanks to the two brothers, Brandon Deo.
They're becoming public figures, you know, and other, you know, 12 to 24-year-olds are, you know, looking up to them and following them on Instagram.
And on other social media sites, including Facebook, Snapchat, and Twitter, where the brothers' channel, Mars Reel, has a presence. Bradley Deo says the brothers started filming their own games when they were high school basketball players.
Mom was a single parent, so we had to get creative, and we said, we're going to buy a camera, we're going to film our own games, and we're going to send it to colleges and see what happens.
In 2010, it became a business. The brothers say exposure makes a difference for young prospects whose games are not covered by the big TV sports channels. Players like Zion Williamson, one of the top high school prospects in the country.
But if you're a kid in a small town like, you know, Spartanburg, South Carolina, you're not going to have a big ESPN truck come film your game unless you're like the best thing since, you know, LeBron or Michael Jordan.
NBA star LeBron James is one of their investors. The brothers employ hundreds of contract video journalists who shoot local games and athletes. Their sites get 25 million online views each month, mostly on mobile devices. Brandon says they also allow athletes to share their own stories.
As we give different high school athletes around the country an action camera, and with the action camera, they can take it to play pickup in their parking lot.
Or show practices and games, getting attention from college and professional basketball recruiters, all while entertaining young sports fans.
Thanks, Jim. That's my VOA colleague, Jim Stevenson. I'm Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. In National Basketball Association playoff action Wednesday night, the Houston Rockets defeated the defending champion Golden State Warriors to even the Western Conference Finals at one game each. Reporter Adam Spillane tells us more from Houston, Texas.
The Western Conference Finals are even at a game apiece after the Houston Rockets beat the Golden State Warriors 127-105 in Game 2.
If we were at first game, we were at a 70. Tonight, we were at a 95. You know, we were pretty aggressive defensively, and that allowed us to get out in transition. You know, so if we be comfortable and sit back and allow them to get to their spots and run around freely, then they're just going to pick us apart.
James Harden and Eric Gordon led the Rockets with 27 points. Harden grabbed 10 rebounds while Gordon connected on 6 3-pointers. P.J. Tucker scored 22 points on 8 of 9 shooting, while Trevor Ariza scored 19. Kevin Durant led Golden State with 38 points, but Stephen Curry was the only other Warrior to score in double figures. He had 16. Game 3 is Sunday night in Oakland. Adam Spillane, Houston.
Thanks, Adam. I'm Sonny Young, and you're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Meanwhile, Game 3 in the NBA's Eastern Conference Finals is Saturday night in Cleveland, Ohio. LeBron James and the Cleveland Cavaliers will try to rally from a 2-0 deficit against the Boston Celtics. Our VOA basketball fans will remember the first team to win 4 games in both the Cavs-Celtics and the Warriors-Rockets series will advance to the NBA Finals. We heard from James Harden in Adam Spillane's report. Harden is the favorite to win the NBA Most Valuable Player Award on June 25th when the league holds its annual NBA Awards ceremony. Harden led the league in scoring during the regular season, and he twice has been runner-up for the MVP award, including last year when Russell Westbrook of the Oklahoma City Thunder won the prize. The NBA has announced that Harden, LeBron James, and Anthony Davis of the New Orleans Pelicans are the 3 finalists for the Most Valuable Player trophy. Davis is also a finalist for the NBA's Defensive Player of the Year award, along with French center Rudy Gobert of the Utah Jazz and Cameroonian center Joel Embiid of the Philadelphia 76ers. Taking a look at a few of the other finalists in that NBA awards ceremony on June 25th, Rookie of the Year, the top first-year player in the league. The 3 finalists are Donovan Mitchell of the Utah Jazz, Ben Simmons of the Philadelphia 76ers, and Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. Tatum has been playing some excellent basketball in the playoffs for the Celtics. He certainly doesn't look like a rookie. Coach of the Year, the 3 finalists are Dwayne Casey of the Toronto Raptors, Quinn Snyder of the Utah Jazz, and Brad Stevens of the Boston Celtics. Ironically, Casey is a finalist for Coach of the Year, and the Raptors gave him the boot at the end of the season. They said, "You're gone, Dwayne. We don't want you coaching anymore." So maybe there'll be some poetic justice and Dwayne Casey will get Coach of the Year, even though he doesn't coach the Raptors anymore. I think Brad Stevens of the Celtics, though, will probably be the NBA Coach of the Year. And that wraps up the May 17th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to Voice of America producer Bill Werkinger. Thanks also to VOA engineer Wojciech Zorniak. And thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
I get it.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a number of developing countries, democracy is in decline. That's because a democratic political culture requires a vibrant civil society sector and an independent media to keep the citizens well informed about the actions and performance of government institutions and officials. Only then do citizens have the means to freely influence public policies. But a free flow of information is anathema to autocrats and would-be dictators. So, despite all the technical developments since the turn of the century, which should improve access to information and social participation, including internet access, greater mobile phone ownership, and easy-to-use digital media platforms, the flow of information is being choked off. In recent years, dozens of governments have passed restrictive laws and regulations that diminish the ability of civil society organizations to register, operate freely, or receive foreign funding. At the same time, print, on-air, and digital news outlets and those who report and publish the news are restricted, shut down, and silenced, while journalists and editors are harassed, attacked, detained, and even murdered. Indeed, according to Freedom House, just 13% of the world's population enjoys a free press, a media environment where coverage of political news is robust, the safety of journalists is guaranteed, state intrusion in media affairs is minimal, and the press is not subject to onerous legal or economic pressures. At the same time, around 67% of all internet users live in countries where criticism of the government, military, or ruling family are subject to censorship. For that reason, the U.S. Agency for International Development, or USAID, is helping to strengthen the legal environment for civil society in over 20 countries, works with local organizations globally to combat growing repression, expand civic space, and strengthen civil society, supports worker organizations to advance worker rights and access to justice in 27 countries, and helps provide civil society, independent media organizations, bloggers, and advocates with mentoring tools and techniques to bolster their information technology capacity and protect their security online. The stakes are high. In some countries, civil society and the media are the only institutions that keep power in check. Through USAID's many programs, the U.S. government works to keep them running.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Hello, I'm Douglas Impoga, host of VOA's Reporters Roundtable. Join us every Thursday as we discuss important African topics and events. I'll have a panel of African journalists and expert guests to discuss the topic at hand. We take a deeper look at important African news topics. That's Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. On our next program, we examine U.S. foreign policy under the Trump administration, from reshaping the rules of global trade to exiting the Iran nuclear deal to moving the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem. President Donald Trump's approach to foreign policy often baffles allies and adversaries alike. We'll talk about it with two veteran analysts. That's Encounter this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts. Every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.